We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Banks it in!
KC Johnson.
Come and get some of this.
Bulls basketball.
Whoa! Stop it! Did not do him like that!
Taking you inside the locker room with KC Johnson.
Oh, my goodness. Did you not get the memo?
Mullion Hall, Chicago Sports Radio, 6-7 to the score. KC Johnson is the basketball man at the Chicago Tribune. Good morning, KC. How are you?
Morning, KC.
What's going on, guys? How you doing?
You know, I listen, I'm not going to diss the Bulls for winning a game. I think it was great that they finally won a game this year, but man, the Melo thing, on the other hand, is just confusing. And I get it. It's all bookkeeping. It's all – but what does it say about your status in the league where you're just kind of the team that Houston can dump salaries on so that you can save a few bucks and they can move on to whatever, Fareed or whoever they're signing?
I personally am disappointed that we're not going to get to see the Melo Jabari front court, because that would have been something. They're going through a rebuild, and we knew that was going to be painful and messy. And these moments where they make trades that are strictly for financial reasons aren't going to sit well with fans. There's just no getting around that. You understand why they did it. I mean, they've got no open roster spot. You got a team calling and saying, here's close to $1 million. Take this contract off our hands. We do need to wait and see with Melo. It's conceivable, although I'll be at a slim chance that they can do something with that contract between now and the February 7th deadline. So we need to wait and see that before we fully judge this. But the Carter Williams one was strictly a cash deal, and this one at first flush looks like it's going to be the same.
So there's no shot of him even putting on a Bulls uniform that we saw displayed prominently. Remember the last time that they flirted with the idea of getting Melo? It was 2014 when he was all over the United Center. He's not putting on number 7.
I remember it well because I was there. It was weird. It was, one of those days where they told us not to show up, but of course we all showed up anyway. And, we're standing outside the United Center and all the banners are, festooned, decorating the building, welcoming him. And then the best part was that Advocate Center hadn't even been built yet. And we'll never forget, we're standing outside the United Center in the parking lot. And, from a distance, we all of a sudden see what appears to be Tom Thibodeau and Carmelo Anthony in hard hats walking into the Advocate Center for a tour. And so we got a little color for our stories there. But, they're giving Carmelo the big tour of the Advocate Center in 14. And then they moved when he didn't pick the Bulls, they moved out and signed Pau Gasol. But, no, I mean, unless something drastically changes, I think all the reporting reflects he's not going to be suiting up for the Bulls.
Did Derrick Rose show up for that tour, Casey?
No, that was a big issue.
He gave a little "what's up, man." They had to rouse him and get him into the locker room after his workout. They talked briefly, but no, Derrick wasn't at the dinner, and yes, that was a big issue. There was a big dinner that night.
How would that have worked? I mean, we were kind of having a chuckle about it. I think there's something about the idea of Tom dealing with him that might have worked. That's just me.
Oh, there's no question that he liked and respected Tom. And, I think it would have worked a lot for a season or two. But, I mean, look at Carmelo's career. It hasn't really translated to a lot of, championships or sustained winning. So, he's a brilliant, individually talented player. I think he's actually underrated as a team player. I think there's this image of him being kind of a selfish ball stopper when he plays with like USA Basketball. So he's actually a really good ball mover and sees the open court well. So it would have been interesting. Look, Pau Gasol made two All-Star teams here. Pau moving on to Powell ended up being okay. Powell was a little bit part of that 15-16 team that kind of went off the rails as far as personalities in the locker room. He was kind of the politician in the locker room for that team. So, now there's always the what-ifs that I remember that 14 summer well. It was pretty crazy.
KC, the Bulls win the campaign revenge game yesterday. saw him talking a little trash. Got a kick out of that. You know, that is only one victory. It was against the Cavaliers. How badly did the Bulls need that? It was the first one of 2019, and I know that they aren't going to have many more, and they haven't had many before previously. But you learn a lot about players, young players specifically, when they go through tough stretches like this. How badly did they need that, and how difficult has this been for them?
Yeah, I mean, that's a good point, David. I mean, that's you're learning a lot about this roster because, you know, with a 10-game losing streak, you need to see how people play through that and how they work through that and how they conduct themselves through that. I did think it was an encouraging sign that Chris Dunn played the way he played yesterday. Again, it's one game, but he had been scuffling for about five. And beyond the numbers that he put up yesterday, I thought it was the style with which he played. He played with a lot of force. He played getting downhill. He pushed the tempo more consistently. The Bulls took 33 pointers, which is atypical for the way they've been playing of late. And, you know, I think that's something that could be utilized more. They don't have a lot of great, you know, knockdown three-point shooters, particularly after the trade of Justin Holiday, but it's still the way the league's playing, and they've got a lot of young talent, and they're not winning. So, you know, why not try to kind of get with the way the league is trending right now? And I think that's something that came out of the post-game locker room yesterday, not only from Chris Dunn, but I was talking to Chandler Hutchinson, who, you know, it doesn't matter, and we've barely been able to write about it because of how bad they've been, but he's quietly played pretty well since he's moved into the starting lineup. And he's a guy who can grab the ball off the board and push it up court in transition. He's a nice ball handler, sees the court pretty well. So, you know, I think I wrote, you know, you're not going to play Cleveland every game, although you do have Atlanta here on Wednesday, but you just got to sustain the style of play and sustain, you know, that work ethic from these young guys through these tough times.
Wendell Carter Jr. had his surgery. He's out 10 to 12 weeks. That would seemingly mean that we're not going to see him. Is that a... you know, there seems to be this idea that that's a good thing, that somehow he won't be poisoned by losing, and he'll be able to come in next year as a first-round pick, basically, with whoever they bring in and a new tandem is formed.
I think that's how you rationalize it, maybe.
Is there any value to that, Casey? Is that
I don't see any positivity to it at all. And, you know, here's the thing. I remember when the Markkanen injury happened that first Thursday at training camp, I was really surprised at like how many emails I got, you know, kind of, you know, look, we all get emails all the time ripping our stuff. That's fine. I don't mind that. But this one surprised me because I was stating that how damaging the injury was. And everyone was like, dude, he's going to be back in like December. Why are you making such a big deal about it? People don't understand how much of a train wreck of succession of events that started, because this entire season was about building chemistry and continuity with your young core.
Right.
Markkanen has never, to me, been the same since that injury, and that's damaging to your entire franchise. So I think that Markkanen injury is as symbolic and as powerful of a statement of what's been wrong with this season as anything, and now you got like the cherry on top of the sundae with the Carter injury, who Carter and Markkanen, to me, are two of the most important pieces of this franchise. You got one missing the first 9 weeks of the season, and now you got one missing the last 3 months of the season. Both are really bad, and these guys need to be out there playing. They need to be out there playing together, and that's why you can't overlook, you know, the bad luck aspect of the season. Yes, the Bulls are bad, but this string of injuries has been something, man. It's been pretty crazy.
So the February 7th trade deadline looms, and obviously there'll be some news that is expected about Carmelo Anthony perhaps, but you look at the injury to Carter, as you point out, in Robin Lopez, once in exile, now back on the floor. What does that do to his trade status potentially, and also what are you hearing about Jabari Parker, if anything's changed?
No, I mean, they're both, you know, being shopped. If you're asking me to guess, I would guess that Lopez has a better chance of being moved than Jabari. And, you know, Carter being out does not affect the Lopez the desire to try to get anything for Lopez at all. So, you know, if Lopez is dealt and Carter's out, they'll just deal with it. They'll play small. Jabari's back in the rotation. They still have Cristiano Felicio, who, you know, isn't wow. obviously a great option, but
about him. Isn't that ridiculous?
Yeah. So they,
what kind of contract does he have? That's crazy.
A great one.
Yeah.
Yeah. You got 2 years left on him, man. So, you know, they're still the Carter injury hasn't impacted those at all. And, you know, the perception out there amongst the league right now is that Lopez will be available via the buyout market. And so teams have been a little bit hesitant to give the Bulls anything for him. The Bulls are trying to dispel that notion. And, you know, and I don't know for sure that they will buy him out if he's not dealt. So, you know, that's something that's going to be pretty interesting to watch because, you know, Lopez has been such a good soldier here. So if you're not able to trade him, I think you do him right and try to get him to a team that wants him and has a chance to win. So, but Lopez is the one that I think has the most potential to be somewhere else come February 7th.
You know, it's so funny, Casey, because as we talk about this and you talk about Markkanen and where he, you know, this was the whole idea of the season was blending these players and finally getting everyone on the court and finally seeing what they have. And oh my God, it just seems so far away from the reality of it.
Right. I mean, this sounds crazy, but I mean, I was there and there was like, I mean, it was mild, but there was genuine buzz and optimism at that media day to start training camp. I mean, because look, the way they closed last season and, you know, they weren't great last season, but they won 27 games when they were trying to lose. They showed some signs, some encouraging signs. But remember the perception at the start of the season? Oh, the Bulls won the Jimmy Butler trade, you know? There was this buzz, like, all right, here we go. And that's what I'm talking about with that marketing injury. That happened Thursday. That was 3 days later. And it's just been off the rails since then. And it's completely changed the perception around that core and this franchise. And you know, I'm not sure how they get that back. Obviously, you do it by better play. And look, Dunn, Levine, and Markkanen are still out there. So, you know, it's time for those guys to show what they got. I mean, there's a lot of games still here left, and you need to see more moments like that Pacers overtime loss at home where the three of them just completely balled out, shared the ball, played well together. You need to see that more consistently because, you know, that's still the future, those three guys. And then obviously Carter's a big part of it too, but that's what you traded Jimmy Butler for. And so those three players, I think, have an opportunity here, and they've got to take advantage of it.
All righty, Casey. Thank you, buddy.
Thanks, Casey.
Take it easy, guys.
Good stuff.
That's Casey Johnson from the Chicago Tribune. We're going to bring in Jim Diapoulos. We'll talk about officiating, and we'll ask him why, you know, what is the value of not having full-time officials? Is there a value? And why hasn't that been resolved at this point? And what did he make of that call? And how do we live with the rules that prevent?
Why would you want to be an NFL official today?
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio 6-7 of the Score.
Third down and 10 at the 13. Drops back, arches a pass down the near side. Broken up at the 5-yard line. Beautifully timed by Roby Coleman in the secondary on a pass down the near sideline. They were looking for Tommy Lee Lewis, and it's an incompletion with a collision literally at the time the ball was coming right between the two combatants down the near sideline at about the 5.
The ref said it was incomplete. Respect the call.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio 6-7 of the Score. Jim Diapoulos, 11 years on the field, 12 years as a supervising official, and he joins us now. Good morning, Jim. How are you?
I'm great. How are you doing this morning?
Well, we're delighted to talk to you because we're hoping for a little direction here. You know, we talked about a number of things, not the least of which is the idea that there are reportedly 24 full-time officials out of 121 officials total. And I don't know, Jim, should guys be full-time? Do they want to be full-time? Is there concern with all that's going on in the league and everything that's happening that more full-time officials is the answer?
You know, I read so much about this, and it's not a magic fix by saying this individual's full-time or this individual is part-time. I can tell you the best officials in the National Football League over the last 25 years that I've been involved are full-time officials. It's, you know, we talk about they just work on weekends, but the good officials, the best officials are working this job 7 days a week during the football season, and they spend an awful lot of time. Just to say they're full-time, you know, I don't know what they would do full-time, because once the season starts, you know, the teams don't practice. I mean, they don't have live practices. There's a lot of walkthroughs. There's a lot of days off. They're very limited in their times. So the officials don't have a whole lot to do. So the ones that are really good will be studying film during the week, be working on their rules. And just to say they're full-time, I don't know if that's going to make a difference, if that's going to make them any better.
Jim, when you have such an egregious no call as occurred in the NFC Championship game, what role does that controversy play in getting something like that in front of the Rules Committee to discuss changes in the review process, in that in the final 2 minutes as we discussed, maybe there's pass interference is reviewed, or maybe there's something else that gives a coach the opportunity to challenge a call that is that blatantly missed? Is that conceivable? Are you in favor of something like that?
Well, certainly when a call such as the one on Sunday in the Saints game with the Rams, you know, happens, and there's so much media attention, so much national attention, you know, it had an outcome on the game. You know, did it decide the game? You know, that's for other people to figure out whether that was the deciding factor with so much that goes on during the game. But, you know, when you work in the league office and things like that happen, you've got to look at all the aspects of this thing. You know, now, you know, we can make a knee-jerk reaction and say right away, we've got to look at every call in replay. And, you know, that's not necessarily the answer to this. You know, you need to find out why this call was missed. And how do you correct this? Do you correct it just by saying, oh, we're going to start looking at replay? But, you know, replay is not 100% accurate all the time also. You know, I don't want to keep talking about the play on Sunday because it was an obvious miss. It should not have been missed. You have veteran officials on the field, guys that have qualified, guys that are at the top of their game, and why it was missed, I can't answer that question. But you had basically three officials that had really good looks at that could have stepped up and made that call. But, you know, just to say, well, let's put replay into it and we'll correct this. I wish it was that easy. And, you know, but again, there was that offside call in the Patriots game with the Chiefs. That was a game changing call. Would we replay a call like that? There's a holding call. There's a roughing the passer call. Do you replay every call that, you know, that you're not, you know, that someone's not agreeable with? So, I don't know. It's a kind of a slippery slope we're going down. I wish, you know, we do have the technology to correct correctable errors, but where do you draw the line on when you do that?
Yeah, you know, and I think the problem is, Jim, you know, we sit here and we're talking about, well, you got to review pass interference. You got to review it because that was such a blatant mistake. And then, you know, earlier in the game, there was a play that should have been a face mask penalty. If that face mask penalty, if that had happened in the final 2 minutes of the game, then do you have to review face mask penalties? I mean, where do you draw the line? Is pass interference something that is so egregious, or was that call just a blown call? And what are the unintended consequences of such a thing? Then you'd have plays throughout the game that you would want to review.
You know, that's a great point. You know, the pass interference call down in, you know, on the goal line on the quarter. I mean, it was really tight, and I can understand them missing it. But now are we going to, you know, call up to the replay booth and have the replay official, you know, buzz down and say, you know, throw the flag for you know, a face mask? And you know, you have a situation with those that in that sense that, you know, the game is still played by individuals. It's played and officiated by individuals. Mistakes are going to be made. I mean, it's the nature of the game. Coaches make mistakes. Players make mistakes. And gosh, you know, officials make mistakes. It's not a perfect game. And for some reason, everybody wants this to be a perfect game. And it, you know, you try, as an official, you try your best to, you know, to work and make it a level playing field. But there are misses out there. I mean, there are misses. And at some point, how do we, you know, how do we change that? Do we try to get the officials better? Do we work with them to, you know, train them? And, you know, but they look at films. And as I said earlier, the good ones are always watching film. They're studying the game. But sometimes things happen so quickly. And, you know, you like to have that TV camera up there to help you out once in a while. But I don't know. It's a tough situation. But that's what these guys have chosen the field. They want to be officials and, you know, and they do a good job. But again, as I said, they make mistakes.
And when they make mistakes, Jim, we learn their names, and the scrutiny is, I imagine it has to be difficult to deal with and cope with on a regular basis for regular guys. You know, so a couple of things. Why would anybody want to do this? Why would anybody want to be an NFL official? And what role does, moving forward, how hard is it going to be to get guys to want to do this, given everything that they're entering in, especially with now legalization of gambling and sports gambling is going to create even more scrutiny and maybe even more questions about the integrity of the crews that officiate games.
You know, it's you set a goal. And to be really quite honest, when I started out, I did it so, you know, because I was in graduate school and I had a young family, and I did it so I didn't have to sack groceries at the local, grocery store. And I did it as a, you know, kind of an avocation. And, you know, but it gets in your blood. It's a way to stay close to the game. And when you get to the National Football League, it's like hitting the lottery. It's a very lucrative position for individuals to officiate in the National Football League, both financially and personally. I mean, you set goals, when you start out working with young football players and peewee games and high school games, and you set goals, you always want to try to reach the ultimate goal, which is the National Football League. So it gets in your blood. It's a great avocation, that it becomes a vocation, and you put so much time and effort into it. But it's unless you've been on the field blowing the whistle with a stripes on, you really can't know what the feeling is like out there.
Will the gambling change the perception at all?
It shouldn't. I don't think it will. You know, as I said, the it's never been an issue with officials in the National Football League. I don't think it ever will be. There's a constant checks and balances with them. There's constant investigations, and they keep an eye on these on them. And as I said, they're very well compensated, on a game on a per game basis. So I think it would be too obvious if officials were trying to have any influence on the outcome of the game.
Jim, we'll let you go. Just out of curiosity, where do you stand on this idea that there is some sort of bias going on with New England? It seems like you've got a coach there who's obsessed with the rule book, and they discipline their players. They also will study every obscure penalty around the league. Is there bias, or are they just so far ahead of the bar with some of the rules that it's hard to make calls against them sometimes?
In all my experiences working with coaches and teams over the years, I had the opportunity to go in and we give little rules clinics, etc. Absolutely, the number one team and coach in the league was the Patriots and Belichick on rules knowledge, wanting to know exactly what is being done, and probably they have the best working knowledge of the rule book. They know what the rules are. They know what needs to be called. They know how the officials, what the philosophy is. They spend a lot of time doing that. So, you know, they've always just done a really good job at it. I don't think do they push the envelope? Every team pushes the envelope. But for some reason, the Patriots understand, you know, how far to the edge they can go, and they understand the rules and how they're going to be interpreted on the field.
Thanks so much, Jim. Really appreciate it.
Thanks, Jim.
Great being with you guys. Have a great day.
All righty. That is Jim Deopolis. You know, and it is really something, Joe, the way that Belichick deals with these things. You know, you ask him any obscure rule. If something comes up around the league, follow that. They'll ask him about it at a news conference.
Like jumping on an incomplete pass after the fact?
He
like
loves
he lectured
stuff like
his
that.
Team he after the Bears game?
Like that.
Yeah. Remember
he
that?
Is obsessed with stuff like that. And that's their advantage in a lot of ways. And everyone's like, no, the league, the commissioner is friends with Bob Kraft and they're afraid of him. And they just are absolutely amazing the way – and I mean, are they bending the rules sometimes? They got a guy that just studies the playbook.
Given the facts, evidence, and laws of science.
They use the laws of science.
We're never saying, why didn't they throw the challenge flag? Because Belichick's guy is in his headset the entire time.
Bernie Adams.
Yes, it makes you wonder why other teams don't operate like that.
Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score, and we have a lot to get to. We're going to talk to Coach Wonstadt. We're going to talk to Mike Florio before we get out of here.
Yeah.
But I'm looking at the I went to Variety, David, the website, and Best Picture is not out yet. It should be out any minute. But lead actor, Christian Bale for Vice, Bradley Cooper, A Star Is Born, Willem Dafoe, At Eternity's Gate, Pride of Willem Dafoe from Appleton, Wisconsin.
Mm-hmm.
Rami Malek, Bohemian Rhapsody, and Viggo Mortensen, Green Book. So
he was saw Bohemian Rhapsody.
Yes, he's the favorite, right?
Yeah, he's a favorite. Yeah. I could see why.
They're announcing the Academy Awards today. I think everyone should get excited.
It's a big deal.
We don't know.
You excited about that? You need the 8 o'clock hour off.
You know, I got to be honest.
Like
first
to walk
call
out?
By an official.
Here's the problem. Is I don't think I've seen a single movie that's nominated for anything.
Then you should be very interested in movies you haven't seen awards for people you haven't. No.
Creed 2 is the one that I missed that I'm kicking myself over.
Oh, yeah. You want to see that.
Yeah. You've seen everything.
No, I have not seen everything.
Because you live the dream.
I do not live the dream.
I have seen basically animated movies.
Listen, you know how hard it is to get my wife to go to the movies?
Yeah, it's impossible for me.
It's difficult.
Yeah.
She's not a big movie buff.
Especially kind of a boxing movie. It doesn't work as much as you think.
Yeah, not exactly date night, right?
Yeah.
Let's go see somebody beat somebody else's brains in.
Yeah, I'm not that interested in Green Book, and she doesn't want to see Creed 2. What are you going to do?
Go see Creed 2 or the next UFC fight on pay-per-view.
There's a lot to get to. There's so much.
So I wanted to talk to you about the Bears going to London because I think that's an interesting element to next year's schedule. It was announced yesterday, the league... And I love how these are sort of presented as, you know, reward. You're going to London.
Woo-hoo!
You get to play the Raiders in London. Okay, so, yeah, it's a great trip. I was there in 2011 when the Bears played the Buccaneers over there. I think you remember that. And it's a terrific experience for fans over there, for fans even maybe here that want to make a trip and a vacation out of it. Here's the thing. When you're looking at the Bears' schedule next year, it increases in difficulty. And you play a first place schedule. It gets tougher. When you looked at the Raiders game, you felt like, everything changes in the context of, you know, free agency in the draft. I get that. But when you looked at the Raiders game, you felt like, whew, that's going to be one where you take for granted. That's a W. You might look at that as an opportunity to rest somebody, develop somebody, whatever it is. That's not the game you necessarily worry about. Now that's the game where
Khalil Mack game.
Well, yeah, but you know what?
That's called strip sack, that game.
You
he's going to strip sack
that?
John Gruden.
That's going to be a lot of fun to revisit that and see their regret when they see him have three sacks and a forced fumble. Maybe. But you know what? Now it's abroad. Now it's a thing. Now it's one of those games that you can't take anything about that odd week for granted because NFL teams hate a departure from the routine. And when you have a team that is as good as the Bears are going to be, likely, in all likelihood, they're going to be very good next year. You don't want any interruption in the process.
No NFL team. The dream of an NFL team is noon at Sunday, noon at Sunday, noon at Sunday. Get into the rhythm of the week. Nobody wants variation. Nobody wants to go abroad. That's just the reality of life, whether it be to Mexico City or the four games in London. And none of those games look like good games either, David. I think the Bears will they'll have a ton of fans. I don't know how many fans there are with the Raiders, but I think there are
there
a lot.
There was last time when they played at Wembley in 2011.
Yeah,
you know, that's a very it's a logo that travels well.
Yes.
It kind of resonates with people over there. Everybody still, I mean, I can remember being there talking at a gathering of Bears fans who were still obsessed with Refrigerator Perry.
Refrigerator Perry was huge over there. It's ridiculous.
So, but do you know what I'm saying? I don't want to. I'm not trying to say, okay, this is you find something to everyone can find something to complain about.
Any variation from the routine is frowned upon. That is the NFL.
So I thought that was something that, like, okay, this is a great, maybe a great thing for fans, maybe not so great for Ryan Pace to look at. Like, he probably the reaction at Hal Saul was, oh, really?
maybe. While they're over there, they should try out some of the professional soccer players and see if they can find a kicker.
By then, they better have a kicker.
Well, you would hope.
By then, they better have one that's already, okay, that's going to be week six-ish, probably mid-season-ish. Somebody who hasn't missed three or more kicks at that point. Somebody who's consistent.
Can I read you a statistic regarding Tom Brady?
Please do.
Dante Scarnecchia is the 70-year-old offensive line coach, and Tom has called him the greatest offensive line coach in NFL history. And they didn't have a penalty, obviously, in Kansas City. The offensive line doesn't make mistakes, but they've been in the playoffs. They've had 90 dropbacks. They have been pressured three times. Tom Brady has been hit three times, and he's been hurried once.
Okay.
No sacks.
So you're crediting the offensive line coach with that?
I'm crediting.
That's interesting.
Well, I'm asking you, we never talk about position coaches. We never talk about, we always talk about play. We talk about Brady and how great he is. Part of what happened in that game, and certainly against the Chargers as well, is that teams that go after the quarterback can't do it against New England. It is very difficult. Khalil Mack didn't overwhelm Tom Brady when they played. They do an unbelievable job of moving around, of protecting, of getting rid of the ball. That's it right there.
I think it's the scheme that it gets rid of the ball as quickly as the Patriots typically get rid of the ball. Now, part of it is Tom Brady's release, certainly one of the quickest releases.
And they also run the ball.
But you've got to give credit to Josh McDaniels.
They keep you off
balance. I don't like the guy. I think he's always going to have a stain because of the way he handled the Colts situation. I wouldn't hire the guy, but I think you have to give him credit for being an offensive coordinator that understands that he's got a 41-year-old quarterback and maybe an offensive line that isn't maybe as strong as the strongest in the league, and they do a nice job of playing to the strengths of the receivers, playing to the strength of their quarterback, and understanding the limitations that he has in mobility.
In that overtime, Tom was standing back there like he was waiting for an ice cream cone.
But they weren't long passes, Mully. They were accurate passes. He had time.
But David, they were all first down passes.
Fair enough.
Third down. I mean,
I'm just
saying.
They protected the pocket. The pocket was secure.
The pocket was beautiful.
And
clean,
I think,
as we say.
It was a clean pocket. You're right. You know, that offensive line is underrated. I think that's what you're getting at. You never really talk about the Patriots offensive line when you talk about the Patriots greatness. You talk about Brady. You talk about the defensive schemes.
Right.
You talk about, you know, Edelman. You talk about Gronk. And they're resourceful running backs. But very seldom do you look at their offensive line as a whole and say, that's the reason they're in the Super Bowl again.
Do you like the idea that the league will talk over the PI calls?
Absolutely. I think it's a necessity. I think it's a mandate. You can't have any other discussion at your next rules committee meeting. That is agenda item number one.
And there were 53.9 million viewers of that game.
Is that all?
I'm talking about the Patriots-Chief game.
Is that all?
The other one was slightly less.
Yeah. You know,
as many who watched the World Series and the NBA final games.
That's not a sign of a sick sport.
Three times.
That's not a sign of an ailing popularity.
We talked about it earlier, maybe off the air. I don't recall, but I think this has been one of the best football seasons in a long time. It's been a great season. Just part of it may be my local bias, watching the Bears get better, but I think all in all, it's been a very satisfying season. I get why Saints fans are upset, but you know, go back and look. The Saints were like 4-2 in their last six games, something like that. They really struggled at the end of the year.
The superstars who had great years were likable characters. There was, for the most part, the absence of a major scandal or a controversy. There wasn't a lot of that. Certainly, there was a share of it. I mean, the Kareem Hunt situation was regrettable and unfortunate and kind of unsavory, but you didn't have that dominating every news cycle every Sunday. The story was the story on the field. I think those kind of stories carried the day. It was a competitive season. You saw surprise stories like the Bears in big markets do well. And you're getting further and further away from the kind of controversies that kept people away. So 54 million people for a championship game. Wow.
Anyone planning on going to this Super Bowl, bring a brown bag. Whatever you do, make sure you bring a sandwich with you. A hot dog, a slice of pizza, a beer, $10 each. $10 for a hot dog. How is that humanly possible?
How do you pay? I think that's together. That's how cheap the stuff is.
Oh, they're doing this? They're doing a special deal?
No, that's their thing. At the Mercedes Dome, like during the regular season, all their concessions are like super cheap.
Wait a second.
Like they want to call it nachos. It's really chips and cheese. But chips and cheese is $4.
Why
like
would you get
$4.
A hot dog with a slice of pizza?
And a beer.
And a beer. Well, I can see the beer, but the hot dog and
all
the pizza.
All three things for $10.
I believe so.
Don't bring a brown bag.
Together?
I believe so.
Forget the sandwich. Wait, go get this pizza.
But what part of anybody says, I want a hot dog and a pizza?
Well, let me say something.
There's two people that are, maybe you're feeding
I'm
two
I'm
people.
Saying,
okay.
You've never been to a game with me, David.
A hot dog's fine. That's fine.
I just want a Bud Light.
Don't order a slice of pizza at a game. It's awful for the most part. I mean, I had a horrible experience in San Antonio at the Final Four where if someone was like, oh, here, I got a pizza. And I'm like, what is that? Mother of God.
What do smoothies go for?
Yeah, I don't know. What about a protein bar, David?
I mean, come on. Just
freak yourself a protein.
A hot dog and a piece of pizza.
Danny Farquhar.
Oh, you know what? That's a story we want to mention before we get to straight football for the 8 o'clock hour. You know what? The Yankees signed ex-White Sox pitcher Danny Farquhar. And Danny Farquhar, Chicago got to know last year because for the unfortunate reasons, but it was scary.
Collapsed in the dugout.
Brain hemorrhage during the game.
Right.
They had to rush him to the hospital. Thankfully, it was close enough. I spent the day with Danny Farquhar in California in July. He got to know his family and just saw him throw at the beginning of this comeback. And to see him, even though it's not with the White Sox, to see him sign a professional contract to pitch again, knowing where he came from, knowing what he went through, it's just one of those great stories about sports. You pull for a guy like that because he's as charismatic and as genuine as any professional athlete I've ever been around. And I saw that story, and too bad it's not with the White Sox, but thankfully the Yankees are giving him an opportunity to chase his dream, and you wish him a lot of luck.
And just to close out the way we began, Best Picture nominees, Black Panther. I did see that movie.
Okay.
Great movie. Black Klansman, haven't seen that movie. Bohemian Rhapsody, I think you saw that movie.
Right? You did see that movie.
The Favorite, I don't even know what that is. What's The Favorite? Who is in that?
It's got Emma Stone. It's like a period piece, 1800s.
Never heard Patriots? Of it.
Green Book, that's the music buddy movie.
Can't wait for that to get on Netflix.
Roma.
I hear that's outstanding.
Yeah. It's not about Rome.
I think it's a Spanish language film.
Okay.
Yeah, if you like to read subtitles.
A Star is Born.
Oh,
okay,
yeah.
Star is Born.
Bradley
Lady
Cooper.
Gaga was nominated for Best Actress for Star.
Yes.
What's
wrong?
It's not acting. You're a singer.
No.
David saw it.
No, Gaga.
I saw it too. It was great.
I'm Gaga
I'm sure
over Gaga.
Great at acting like a singer.
She wasn't doing Lady Gaga songs.
If you sing, you can't act? Barbara Streisand, please.
No, she's a singer. In a movie about a singer.
She wasn't playing herself.
Ooh, congratulations.
Can I just finish the list and we can get to break? Vice is the last movie for Best Picture. And now we'll never speak of it again. It's too emotional.
Lady Gaga, Best Actress as a singer.
Don Johnson in Vice was awesome.
Don Johnson?
Wasn't that? Oh, Vice.
No, it's Christian Bale.
I thought it was Miami Vice.
Look at that.
That 80s
you
joke.
You are very clever.
Sorry.
That was very clever.
Bohemian Rhapsody, though. I think that's going to be
the winner?
Yeah.
Okay. I'm going with Black Panther because it's the only one I saw.
Good reason is that.
Yeah. This guy, everyone's got to have a favorite.
Let's ask Wani.
We'll bring in Dave Wannstedt next, and we'll talk some football. We'll talk about what it's like to face Belichick a couple times a year and this dynasty that we're looking at. Really kind of an unusual set of circumstances as we see this. Let me ask you this. Any chance Tom Brady retires after the Super Bowl if he wins it?
Walk away. Into the sunset, John Elway style.
We'll get Dave's opinion. It's Mully and Haw on the Score.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto-pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto-pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee 24 monthly bill credits for well-qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.